So welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. And we got a very special episode here. This is your host, Marcel. I'm joined by my esteemed colleagues, known in the finance game as the Troublesome Threesome.
That's a new nickname.
Yeah, I never heard that.
Oh, you have it? It's all over the internet.
Is it?
It was a meme yesterday, so it died this night. Tonight.
I've been called many a terrible things, including babyface, but I've never been called a troublesome threesome.
All threesomes are troublesome in my experience. How am I supposed to sneak two women out of my house before my wife gets home?
So this is Jason E. Ault, the guy that's our resident, I don't know.
Finance expert.
Don't get so full of yourself, you know, like we gotta take it down a notch there. We gotta make this is a realistic podcast. We're not selling snake oil. We got Corbin here though. Corbin's actually a real finance guy. He's probably the best finance writer in all of magic.
Thanks, and a real nice guy.
And a real nice guy.
I feel not trolled.
And then we got our baby face, Mr. Deal With It himself, the shambling of all sharks, Ryan Bouchard.
Awesome.
But you know, we're being eclipsed though, honestly. You know, we're trying to pump ourselves up because we're about to be overshadowed in a minute when we introduce our special host, special guests today. We've reached out to some fellow people from the beautiful town of Oakland, California. Where the sun shines and the weather's always nice. And, I visit their offices over there and they got a beautiful rooftop where you can see the sights of Oakland. I got the guys from Puka Trade. We got Eric and Mitch. How are you guys doing?
Hey, what's up guys? My name is Eric Freitag from PukaTrade.com. Just want to say thank you so much for having us on the show.
Yeah. And I'm Mitch Trail, technology guy there. Love Brainstorm Brew. Appreciate the opportunity here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on guys.
You got it. Yeah. I mean, long time listener, personally. I don't know. You've been listening.
Yeah,
I always come out and tell you about the show. Yeah, it's good, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was actually that Mitch, he hit me up and he was like on Twitter. You're one of the first people I met on Twitter, a magic person in person. So I was a little, you know, a little skeptical. I'm like, all right, I got to go into this. I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm getting into, so make sure you don't bring something too expensive.
You know, it's the passport, man. Magic gets you in, dude. It's the bay. I mean, it's the connector. I mean, when you find somebody who's got this mutual interest, you got to reach out. You got to connect.
That's true. There's literally no one who plays Magic that I wouldn't sit down with for at least a half an hour.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Fill them out. You know, after that half hour, you could be like, okay, we're going to depart and be separate ways from this point on. But yeah.
I know how it is sort of funny to like meet people on the internet for the first time. It's always funny when you meet them in person. You're like, how is this going to go? Like, what kind of wild card is this person? Yeah.
He's going to be using my skin for a deck box at the end of the weekend.
Yeah. I had AOL and I did some of the first internet dating, I guess, or try to hook up through AOL. And I had some mishaps on there. So I learned early on that the internet is a scary place. And
Marcel, don't admit to that.
Well, I mean, it was nothing horrible, but what people look like on the phone and what they look like in person could be two totally different things.
Well, that's your problem, Marcel. You're trying to look at people on the phone.
Well, no.
Especially back in the days of AOL.
Everybody looks bad over a modem.
Marcelisms.
Marcelism.
She looked exactly good over the phone. Shit, Marcel says.
There's no recovery from that. So let's move on to you guys so I could take the attention off of me as I get rid of the embarrassment. So tell us how you guys got started in magic. And
ooh, we're going way back.
How far back are we going? When did you guys start?
94.
Well, yeah, both. Okay. That's right.
All the way
back
to the
94. I mean, that's my, exactly. Back in the original days, I remember going to DundraCon and they were playing this game instead of role playing. It was everywhere. And I played this game in high school. I was out of it for a long time, came back to it last couple years, and it's been incredible to see what the game did.
Yeah, likewise. I had that same experience. I started in Mirage, was playing through high school, then stopped at around like 2000 to 2008. And I remember checking back in and just being blown away by how much better the game got, you know? That was I checked back in right around Zendikar, and I remember being so stoked about Landfall and being like, oh, they fixed that shitty situation you get in when you don't need lands late in the game and then you draw them. It's like, oh, we can get value out of that. And, you know, all the new mechanics that I saw them, you know, publish and come out with just made the game so much better, and I kind of got in full time.
Real crowd pleaser, that Zendikar block.
Oh, yeah.
What about Rebound? Get ready, fellas. But it's been a good ride. I mean, it's been amazing to get back into Magic, and I think – I mean, I've been a technology guy since I was growing up, and of course, just sort of seeing how things have matured on the web, and things have matured in video games, of course, and to see that Magic has kind of moved along with it to some extent. I mean, Moto, I think, could have gone further faster than it has, perhaps, but there's so much out there now, and of course, we've been building PookaTrade towards that kind of ideal of like, look, we can build tools here to make parts of Magic better. I mean, I think everybody's always worked to make different parts of Magic better. Magic cards, info, all these people, sort of community resources, and that's been a big driver for us as fans of the game. So,
well, cool. Well, how about we take a moment here? We want to find out what PookaTrade is all about. But let's make our listeners a little bit better at this game and move into a finance 101.
Sure, sure.
So, what's your idea? You got something for us? What's the topic?
Sure. So, I mean, we've talked a bit about trading up, trading down. We've talked a bit about, I mean, I think the kind of central game in all of Magic to me seems to be arbitrage, finding an opportunity to sell something for more than you bought it for, finding little margins here and there, running them at scale if you can. I mean, PookaTrade is not so much a margin game as it is a consolidation game. I think we've seen people take a single card and splash it into many different cards, where we had somebody who sent like a Tabernacle out and then they got 30 fetch lands or whatever for the same price, or we had somebody who turned $1,000 cards into a Mox, right? And so, so I think there's certainly the capability there to transmute your value.
Yeah, I think that's one real beauty of it, and that's certainly a lot of the positive feedback we get from folks is that on, you know, in other ways that you trade Magic cards, there's stigma against trading up or trading down or trading standard for legacy or legacy for modern or whatever it is. Everyone's got kind of their own unique value system that they'll bring to a trade when they sit down and try to negotiate. And it can be really frustrating and annoying when all you kind of want to do is get something relatively equitable done and move on. And we kind of resolve that by saying, look, every card is worth its fair trade price. And when you send that card out, no matter who you send it to, you're going to get the full value for that card. So whether you're trading up or trading down or whatever your particular brand of exchange is, we're going to provide that for you.
Yeah.
So Ryan Corbin, you guys got something about trading up or trading down with some tips for the people?
Yeah, I mean, and this is, you know, it's really interesting. That's one of the reasons why I thought this was a good topic with the PookaTrade guys here is because PookaTrade is something where the trading up, trading down doesn't necessarily apply, because if the numbers add up, they add up. And in real life, that's not how it works, because a lot of times, you know, it goes, nobody wants to trade standard cards for legacy cards. You know, they want to keep the legacy cards because it's going to hold value over time. So, when you know, the Finance 101 just explain what it is, I guess, is the idea. If you're trading down, you trade one expensive card into many cheaper cards. And if you're trading up, you do the opposite. And a lot of times trading up is seen as the better way to go about things, because if you have, you know, 10 $1 cards, you know, you're not – no dealer is going to give you more than maybe a quarter for each of them, right? So that doesn't do you anything. Like, it's $2.50. If you trade them up into those 10 cards into one $10 card, all of a sudden a dealer will give you $6-$7 on it. It's much more desirable. It allows you to turn essentially junk into something for real. So that's why trading up is really a valuable tactic. And there are times when trading down makes sense. If you have something, and this comes around a lot for us, you know, kind of in the dealer side of things, where I never sell dual land. Nobody ever wants to buy a dual land. Nobody ever wants to buy a Tarmogoyf. Nobody wants to drop $200. What they do want to do is buy a bunch of $5 cards. So trading down for me can be very useful, because, you know, I get rid of an expensive card. I get a bunch of stuff that will actually move. So, you know, you just have to know when it's right to do something. If you're trying to accomplish a goal, like to build an EDH deck or modern deck, and you need some cheap stuff, well, then don't feel bad about trading down one expensive card to get all the pieces you need. But on the other hand, if you're trying to, you know, make, you know, quote unquote, your value, you want to try to be trading up. That's kind of the 101 way to look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I actually do a fair bit of trading down on PookaTrade personally. I love to trade on PookaTrade. I love to trade a scrub land. I'll go get a scrub land from some guy, a good guy, you know,
on the corner.
Yeah.
with a trench coat
from somewhere, you know, pay him fair market value. You know, I mean, I don't know what cat, nobody, they don't love scrubland as much as they love some other dual lands, but you can get it, you know, for a decent amount of cash. And then you give that to someone on Puka Trade and you give them just like the mintiest scrubland and they are so hype, man.
Oh, yeah.
And the value is good. You know, you can, again, there's a spread there that you can play around in, and you can turn this card into something that fills out a deck for you that does so much more for you.
Exactly. Actually, I just did that with a Goyf. I had a foil a Drastaff Goyf I got from Vegas last year, and I got rid of it on Puka Trade. And I hit people up because it is heavily played because I had a Drastaff. So people that were looking interested in the Goyf, I hit them up and said, "Oh, I got this Drastaff," and I was able to find someone that we worked out a price that worked out for him, worked out for me, and I just put that up there and got a bunch of shock lands because I might get into paper modern. I was looking at it and start with the card base.
Love to have you.
Yeah, very nice. Now, that's crazy to me. Now, I guess I'm getting schooled here because I didn't realize that a draft stamp turned a card to HP. Like, to me, it's like, it's almost like I always looked at it kind of like a signed card. It's just like this cool little.
I think a signed card's MP. Yeah. I think there's something there. I mean, it's weird.
I mean, yeah, I don't think I prefer a signed card necessarily, but I didn't. I mean, the stamp's kind of cool. Sometimes it's like a little birthday cake on it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I thought it was cool because it's rare because it was the only Modern Masters and it was a day two draft stamp. So there's only so many of those that are out there. There might be three or four.
Yeah, maybe in the entire world. Many. For sure. Yeah.
Entire world that has a day two draft stamp for Vegas, so I think there's some value there.
But is there different stamp for day
No, two? The problem is it's not. It's whatever stamp was lying around.
Right.
whatever crummy old stamp. Hey,
at least they didn't write the LV like they did to some other people, because that would have been the worst.
Yeah.
Would it? Because then at least it would have actually... Oh, you mean in Sharpie.
Yeah, in the Sharpie, yes.
Well, so at least then it's clear what it's from. Yours could have been a random secretary stamping the wrong thing.
Yeah. That's true.
Oh, I got some other sweet tips. This is some baseline Puka Trade stuff. It's 2014 text. Okay, but you got to know it to get along. When you complete a trade, immediately go look at that person's want list.
Oh, yeah.
Because now they have points because you just sent them points, and then you can just send them a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's sweet because then you get to send cards back to the person who sent you cards just now, you know, and just did this like person to person trade, and it feels really good.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. That is some inside tech.
Yeah,
I mean, that's one thing that I think people are always most blown away by when they first experience Puka Trade is just how quickly their points move. You know, these do not sit around in your account.
Right.
Like, if you have cards on your want list, people are going to send you those cards with lightning speed. And
yeah.
So
yeah.
Like,
it's a little scary. Like, there's times I got some points and I put the wrong card up. I was like, I didn't want that, and all of a sudden it's already been filled. Oh, I'm like, oh. Yeah.
Looking at like a grace period, almost like an undo add to want, you know, it doesn't go live for 10 seconds or something. I mean, we're looking at ways to ameliorate that. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of crazy. It's insane to me how fast it is. I mean, I got a Sarkhan. I put a Sarkhan on my list because that guy's crazy cheap right now. And it came to me in 11 seconds, man. It's unreal. Refresh my page and some guy from Germany sending me a Sarkhan. So love the way that works. Yeah.
I have heard complaints though, and it even myself, is that it's kind of hard to find someone to send your cards to, especially when you got a lot of lower value cards.
Like, this is I think that a lot of people can mistake that for nobody wanting their cards, when in fact people want their cards all the time. It's just the reality is that there's so many people who are trying to send that there is a little bit of a competition there. We call that survival of the clickest. It's like whoever clicks first when they see that card come up on the send card page just gets it, you know? And we like it because it's sort of an egalitarian way of saying, like, whoever wants the most gets it. But I think we do think that there's more to be done to spread it out a little bit and make sure everybody's getting trades.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it is a hustle. It is a bit of a grind, and we feel like we can make it easier. We can use technology and tools to put more power in your hands to save you time. And so we've been looking at different kinds of trades. We talked about pull trades, where you're browsing someone's trade binder, their public have list. You're initiating trades based on cards you didn't even know you wanted, rather than we've talked about queue systems where you're sort of getting in line to send the next Theros Thoughtseize that someone actually wants, right? And so there's a lot of ways to approach this thing. I mean, people have asked for alerts, like, can you just tell me when it's time to send my Elspeth? And the answer is
No.
No, because there's 100 people who want to send an Elspeth right now. We can't tell everybody that it's time.
Yeah. You know, but there are solutions to that that we're probably going to move forward with pretty soon here.
Right.
And like one potential idea is that, you know, if there's 100 people who want a card and it pops up on the list, you don't tell them all at once. You give everybody like 1 second of a head start, depending on a number of different criteria. And maybe that's, you know, that person's trading record, how much positive feedback they have, what their ship time usually is, how close they are to the person who wants the card. You know, we can look at all these characteristics to make a decision about who gets prior notice. And if we go for a queue system type situation, it'll probably be alert based like that.
Yeah. Just trying to keep it fair.
Okay. So now let's break it down to people, give basically a Puka Trade 101. I've been doing it in a nutshell. Let's try to do it quickly. Just like, how does Puka Trade works? And
sure. Yeah.
Give it out so people can know what we're talking about when you say want list and sands and all this other stuff.
You got it. You got it. So Puka Trade is basically an automated peer-to-peer trading system for Magic the Gathering players. And we say peer-to-peer because it's not like you're sending the cards to us and then we're passing them along to your trading partner. We're just connecting Magic players together so that they can trade. But the really revolutionary thing about what we do is that we facilitate one-way trades. So instead of in a normal trading scenario where you have two people with congruent wants and needs who have to come together and find a trade match and negotiate through that trade match and then make sure it happens, you know, instead of that kind of situation, we just say, look, we know what cards are worth, right? And we represent the value for that card in something that we call Puka Points. And Puka Points are just kind of like a trade credit type of system that we use on the site. So
how much is one Puka Point worth?
One Puka Point is worth 1 cent. So Sea Drano, for example, right now is worth 839 Puka Points, or $8.39. So basically, if I go to the send a card page and I see that someone wants a Sea Drano, I just send it to them, right? And then I initiate a trade, send that card over. And then at that point, the recipient's Puka Points go into escrow, right? And once the Sea Drano arrives, they check it. They say, oh, this looks good. It's, you know, in the right condition. Everything that I expected is good. And then they complete the trade. At that time, the Puka Points get released from escrow into the sender's account. And then, now that they have points, people will send them cards on their want list just like they did for the person that they sent to.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, and for people who don't know, Puka Trade is something that has grown a ton over the last couple years since you guys started. It's been a great tool pulling people together. So I guess – I mean, tell us, how did you get started? You know, when did this idea, this concept of Puka Trade come about? And how did you, more importantly, I guess, take it from a concept to reality? What's the story?
Yeah, you got it. Well, as I mentioned before, I did take a big break after, you know, starting to play Magic in 93 around Mirage. I took that break from 2000 to 2008. And when I got back, I noticed that the site had gotten a lot better. But what I also noticed is that it got a lot more expensive. It had become like almost prohibitively expensive to play Magic. And whereas before, maybe you spend $50 putting a deck together, now, you know, you're talking about a couple $1,000s sometimes to put together these decks. And I really didn't like that element of it. Like, I didn't like that, at least in my playgroup at that time, the person with the most financial resources could build the strongest deck and kind of blow everyone out. And I really wanted to make it kind of more accessible. At that time, I didn't have a bunch of, extra money to be spending on Magic cards. And so I turned to the internet to try to find a better way to trade. I was surprised to find that there was not one out there.
No, there's nothing out there. It's unreal. I mean, I remember coming back to the game and I was like, oh, TCG player, this seems like a very efficient way to purchase Magic cards that I want and not to crack boosters. And yet it's incredibly expensive and I'm spending all this dough on it. And there's got to be a better way.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I mean, there's nothing wrong with TCG player. They're connecting people with cards, which is fantastic.
Sure.
But it's definitely a sale, you know. I didn't necessarily want to be cracking boosters to get cards, and I didn't want to be buying singles either.
Yeah.
I looked at my collection that I had from back in the day, and you know, there was significant value in it. And I think we can all say that when we look at our trade binders and look at our collections, like there's a ton of latent value in there. And it was insane to me that there was no great way to leverage the value from that. So that's kind of how Puka Trade was born. I wanted a way to trade, and I wanted a way to trade without all the bullshit that went into trading, like all the haggling back and forth and the negotiations and, like, you know, the failed deals that moved at the speed of email or whatever, or the drudgery of, like, dragging your collection to your local game store and trying to, you know, find someone to trade with. It was just, you know, it was all a nightmare to me. And in a lot of ways, Puka Trade was born out of the way that I exchanged with my friends at that time, right, which was just like where you crack open someone's binder and you're like, oh, shoot, I need these four cards. And they're like, yeah, just take them. No problem. We don't have to trade. You know, like, you're my buddy.
Give me later.
Yeah, you get me next time. And right, of course, like, next time they're building a deck, it's like, yeah, crack my binder, harvest whatever you need. And, you know, I think among friends, there's always that, you know, maybe you're doing like some sort of back of the envelope right, tally in the back of your head. Like, oh, yeah, he's, you know, there's one Siege Rhino between us, or, right, or something like that. But at the end of the day, it all basically equals out. Really, that's the experience that I wanted to engender amongst strangers.
Right.
And I really believe that we've accomplished that.
Yeah. No, I mean, Eric Freitag, fair trade evangelist, man. I remember when I met you, almost 2.5 years ago. And it was the first Indiegogo campaign. It was the first crowdfunding campaign. And I, Mitch Trail, was just a lonely donor on my couch, man. I was listening to podcasts. I was checking out this weird Puka Trade site. I remember being a user on it a few months before I ever talked to Eric and just thinking, like, what is even going on with this thing? I put some wants on my list. I don't know. Feels like Microsoft Excel. And then someone sent me a Leashling. You know, this old Ravnica dog. He's like a 6-mana 3/3. I don't know. He's just terrible. But someone sent me this card that I added to my want list, and it just arrived. And I thought, what is this piece of mail from the sky? This, like, magic card that I forgot I wanted, that I read about on some Daily MTG Brew article, you know? And then I remember Chad and Eric up, and it turned out Eric lived up the street from me. We're both Oakland, California guys. He was running Puka Trade out of his spot on Shattuck, and I'm in downtown, and we started talking, and we got together. And I'm a technology guy. I got a background in building websites, and I saw what he was trying to build with the first campaign, and I believed in it, and I frankly wanted to see it be real in the world, and that was one of the reasons why I was a contributor initially, and why I wanted to work with Eric towards this future where we can trade these things real easily, and we can treat it like a game, like a fun and weirdly valuable game.
Right, right. I remember that situation you're describing, and just thinking about like how kind of like incredible it felt to just, you know, just feel like, man, this guy reached out to me by email. He's like, you know, it was at a time where I was like looking for, you know, good developers to make the site better. Like, he's like, oh yeah, he invited me over to his office, and you know, he plays Magic too. Like, it just felt like this incredible confluence that has always just been incredibly easy, you know.
Right,
and
right.
I think complementary
personalities. We got a lot of good things going between
us.
Yeah,
I certainly feel like it's been an incredible partnership.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So I could tell you, I could contest to how hard it is to work with, you know, people in business and friendships, and right. Oh my God, the nightmares that can arrive from that. It's just,
yeah.
Well, it's just when you care about something enough to be frustrated when it doesn't go right, or when it's not as good as you know it could be. You know, it takes a patience, and it takes an understanding to work with someone closely to build something that you really care about. And I mean, that's something Eric and I've always talked about, is just sort of, what are the core values? What are we trying to really do here? And how do we stay close to what really matters, and stay close to the community? And there's just so many different pathways that Puka Trade could take as a business.
Yeah.
You know, and we're trying to make these decisions as we go along to stay responsible and to stay close to what matters. So,
yeah, it's been good.
So I know there's some questions people have about Puka Trade, and, you know, there's theories that people have, conspiracy theories. And so we want to get this out here so we could dispel those. You know, people, I've heard the term Ponzi scheme mentioned when they speak Puka Trade, and it's mostly people that have no idea about this. Just talk about this and sure, let people know.
Yeah, I mean, so as I understand it, I mean, if we're going to have any conversation about, you know, Ponzi scheme and what qualifies that, and, you know, how it relates to the site, like, I think we got to really define our terms. I mean, like, a Ponzi scheme, a pyramid scheme, what is that? Like, it's an unsustainable business model that involves, like, promising participants payment for services you know, primarily for enrolling other people into the scheme rather than supplying any real investment or sale of products or services to the public, right? And I know that because I just read that on Wikipedia just now.
Right, right. You're the new guy and you're enriching all these other guys at the top of the pyramid who have been there for 2 years. It's like this Amway multi-level marketing worry, right? I mean, people,
right.
I think fundamentally people are concerned about a scheme. No one wants to be wrapped up in a scheme, no matter what it's called. And so we're cautious about where we send our cards, where we spend our money, whatever. Yeah.
And it is a new idea, you know. Puka Trade is something that, you know, people haven't seen before. And you know, I think there's you know, some amount of suspicion that they approach it just like they would anything. But the key thing to me is that in a pyramid scheme, you know, you're not supplying any real value or investment to the people who are participating to it. And that I think is where Puka Trade excels. Like that's what makes us like not fit into the definition of a pyramid scheme, and that every day we provide value to everyone who's trading on our site.
Yeah.
You know, we've now facilitated over 600,000 trades. Like 600,000. Right. Like that is a tremendous amount of commerce, and it's more every day. Like these are actual trades that are happening in the real world. So the idea that it somehow qualifies as a pyramid scheme it just seems outrageous to me.
Yeah.
I think that the people who are kind of like fomenting conspiracies or whatever, probably haven't taken a second to really look at the definition of what that means.
I mean, I think, right, when you talk about a pyramid scheme, you're talking about time. You're talking about people at the top who got in first and people who are at the bottom who got in later. And the truth is Puka Trade flattens that. The person who just arrived has the giantest collection in the world, and they can be totally successful and have a great time on Puka Trade. I mean, in many ways, it's not flattened. It's like the sphere where anybody can trade with anybody. Anybody can see anybody on the site around the world and can exchange freely. I mean, we really have worked hard to prevent, to remove the roadblocks, right? And we have, it's a free website. It's going to be free forever. I mean, there's the fundamental quality of what makes Puka Trade so good is always going to be there. And it just is about enabling trade that wants to happen already.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, just so you know, like the dollar amount of the trades we facilitate is now over $2.5 million. Like that's like real world commerce that, you know, we've enabled through the site. And I think that counts for something.
So what's stopping you guys from just printing up a bunch of points for yourselves and then trading that out to fill out whatever modern decks that you guys want to build? And how do you guys regulate, say, bonus points and stuff like that that you're passing out to people?
Yeah, that's a totally fair question. And the answer to it is that we have loftier goals than just grabbing a bunch of magic cards and taking the first monorail out of town.
Right. Yeah, like, it's true.
You know, I mean, you know, the real answer is that we would never jeopardize, you know, the viability of Puka Trade, both as a free service to the magic community and to something that could potentially sustain us in the long term, just for the short term gains of getting a few magic cards. Like that would be insane. It would be short sighted, and it wouldn't make any sense.
Right. I mean, we're diligent about monitoring the economy. We recognize the nature of the Puka point. We recognize the sort of way that the value changes, and we've worked closely with economists over the past couple of years to monitor the rate of currency exchange, to sort of the money demand at any given moment on the site, and to figure out really how much currency should be in the system in order to enable optimal trade between the users. And what we found over the past 2 years is that there hasn't been enough currency. There hasn't been enough resource in people's accounts to enable the kinds of trades people want. People are hungry for these $200, $500 magic cards. We're seeing Judge Promo Elish Norns go over the wire that it just takes a lot of saving up your Puka points to get it. And the only way to get that is to have more users on the site, putting more value in. And, you know, we've looked at this with bonus points. We've looked at this with point purchases, and we've got real tight controls on these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when you talked before about how quickly trades get snatched up, what you were actually talking about there is the velocity of our currency, the velocity of the Puka points, like the speed at which the speed of which, you know, the Puka point changes hands. And the higher the velocity of money, like the higher the demand, you know, for that currency in any given marketplace. So the short answer to your question is that many more points do need to be printed. And, you know, the reason for that is that the site's growing so fast. We have so many people signing up every month. We actually need to be printing Puka points in proportion to those signups.
But they don't belong in our pockets. They belong in the pockets of the new users. They belong in the pockets of the people who need to come on and kick the tires a bit and see how the system works, and to sort of benefit from the total community, right? Yeah. And you know, it the money supply should only grow in accordance to the user base growth.
Yeah.
So we're thinking real critically about this stuff, and we're certainly learning a lot as we talk to the educated folks that we've worked with to sort of analyze these transactions, and it's fascinating. I mean, I remember when I first came and talked to Eric, I couldn't believe that this worked. I couldn't believe that this hadn't just crumbled, you know, in the 2 years he'd started it, and yet it was thriving, and people were so hungry for more trades. And I think that's sort of the nature of it, is that we just got to keep looking at it and keep making it easier for people to exchange these things.
So how do you guys make money on Puka Trade? What is your cut out of the situation?
Yeah, so right now the site is financed primarily by subscription memberships, which are optional. That was one thing that was always super important to us with the site, is that every way that you spend money on Puka Trade is optional. Like, it's not something that anyone has to do. And that goes along with our mission of extending free trade to the Magic community. You know, the way we saw it, like, when people are conducting a trade, they're doing it to save money. You know, we could have set up some sort of transactional fee situation where we take some amount of pennies for every trade that happens. And, you know, would that have been more profitable than what we're doing? Probably. But it's not something that I wanted to do. Again, it goes back to our site's mission of making the game of Magic more financially accessible for everyone. And, you know, frankly, like, I want a world where people can trade for free. Do some people have more financial resources than others? Absolutely. Are those the people who are going to contribute to keep the site running for everyone? Yeah. And I really like that system. I think it works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've absolutely looked to sort of diversify the features and to think critically about what kinds of cool things we can offer to the people at the top, the rare members, and eventually we're going to go to mythic rare ones. You know, we're going to have all these cool features available to people who want to get more out of the service, people who want to use it from a financial perspective, who want to send more cards out, receive more cards. And we've just recognized that there's different kinds of users. Yeah. And that in many ways that the most avid and affluent users can underwrite the common and free users. And that allows the entire community to grow, because it's just a feedback loop.
Absolutely. And in exactly that same way, some type of users don't want to send cards out. There are some folks out there who just buy Puka points. That's one of the other revenue sources for the site as well.
Right.
You can buy our Puka points to exchange them, you know, for cards on the site.
Yeah, it's just a better deal if you live with euros. You know, like if your life is in euros, your exchange rate is positive. I mean, there's so many people for whom it's actually a great deal. We have the secret Argentine Puka Trade Facebook group. You know, there's all these insider tips about exchange rates, and that's a real part of it. So
yeah, absolutely.
I tell you, I love that trading with Argentina. I lived in Argentina for 6 months and I had an incredible time, and I just wish the postal service was a little faster. That's like my only real complaint, you know. Yeah, it just takes a little too long to get down there. But sending internationally has been so much fun. I mean, we have so many folks on the site now from of course Italy, Argentina, Japan, Germany, I mean everywhere. And that's been huge. It's just to open up the rest of the world to me in terms of exchange. So, I mean, that's what we're really excited about moving.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'm learning, that the U.S. trades are a little bit less prevalent as, say, the international trades, and learning how to navigate and figuring out, you know, using the international stamps and saving money and doing trades that way.
Yeah, there's some finance 101 for your listeners. Right. Global Forever stamps are incredible.
Critical.
It's basically like putting two Forever stamps on something. I think it's roughly the same equivalent. They're like $1.10 per. And, you know, you just slap one Global Forever stamp on any outgoing letter. That I think it's got to weigh an ounce or less, which should be like 7 or 8 magic cards in the top loader. And that thing will go anywhere in the world.
Yeah, really makes you wonder about the USPS and how it's so damn good.
How does that work?
I mean, I really...
They're bleeding money. They are going bankrupt.
They're hurt.
To be fair, they're not going bankrupt because of anything they're doing. They're going bankrupt because they have to pre-fund retirement.
for their employees.
Right, that's right.
To inject some real world information here, that is why they're going bankrupt. It's a law imposed on them by the government, essentially to put them out of business because it's something that other companies do not have to do.
Yeah, poor suckers. But I tell you, they're selfless and they do the work and it's good and it is consistent, and that is something. I tell you, I mean, working in the with a website, I mean, everything's so virtualized. You know, my life is staring at instrumentation and crazy monitoring charts and making these things, these servers run. And when I see the hard work that these postal service carriers do, getting us our magic cards every day, I got to marvel at it.
You know, I always used to want to be a postman.
Really?
I want to be great. I want to be the one that walks around, you know.
Sure. You get to wear the shorts.
Yeah, you get to wear the shorts, you know, get to get some exercise, get out on the sun.
You get chased by a dog, maybe.
Yeah.
Don't slip, bust your ass. When it snows.
I passed the test. I took the test to pass it. I could have been a mailman.
Could have done it.
What happened?
Something better came along.
Something better than being a mailman? Come on.
Well, shit, there's a high value there. I just had to weigh my options. And
that sounds not bad.
Yeah. And instead, you're working hard doing sound engineering, just crushing it. So you made wise choices here. No, I mean, it's been fun, of course, using the mail and exploring this stuff. And
yeah, there's cool little tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that are out there.
What are some of the cool hacks?
You know what else? There was this... Actually, what everyone should do is go and check out The Professor's latest video. This guy, Tolarian College on Twitter and YouTube. He just put together a shipping primer with everything you need to know about how to ship a magic card. If you've never done it by mail, go check it out. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, he gets into our favorite thing, which is A1 envelopes.
Yeah.
You know these things, you guys? I don't even know. It's an A1 envelope is like an invitation envelope,
right,
and it's sized almost exactly to fit a top loader.
Yeah.
So it's like minimum weight. It doesn't get crunched in machines like larger envelopes sometimes do. It just fits magic cards perfectly. They're incredible.
Yeah. I think it's AKA the baronial envelope.
Baronial.
I remember getting the baronial envelopes, and it's like you get it in slate gray, and it's like it's got the little pre-sealer, and you just put this like the sweetest scrubland into the baronial, you know, and you just shoot it out the door, and you know that whoever gets that card is going to be so hyped. I mean, that's a realization. Like, I got a lot of cards off the internet, off eBay, off this and that, and sometimes it's in a bubble mailer, and usually it's very functional, but I have received some beautiful envelopes off Puka Trade, man. People draw on those envelopes. People put crazy throw-ins in there.
Oh, yeah.
People just go nuts, and part of it is the personal connection you're getting with someone else on the other side of the world. Who wants your old crappy magic cards, or even cards that you love and you're getting rid of because you got to, or because it's time for someone else to enjoy it. And that connection, having this sort of pen pal that you don't know, it just send you things, is really amazing. So,
I have a question. I mean, when you guys started when you started the website, did you think you'd be where you are today and then be this big and, you know, be launching this campaign, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and all these things? Did you really, you know, when you started out, is this where you always wanted to be, where you planned to be?
Yeah, the short answer is yeah. Like, this was always a planned stepping stone on the journey, and it's certainly not the end point either. Like, there's still so much that we want to accomplish, and I think the vision for what the site can become is, you know, as incredible as we've gotten already, you know, like, We have huge plans for the future. You know, we got to get support for condition, non-English cards. We got to get quantity up there.
Yeah, mobile site. I mean,
and we got some crazy plans to start getting into the Magic Online sphere as well.
Right. I mean, Magic is so much bigger than just paper, and we've had good success there, and we're sort of anchored in that world. But I mean, from a technology standpoint, I mean, I'm real sensitive to what's possible, what is out there for. You know, folks who are pushing the limits in terms of magic exchange and just magic sites, magic technology. So we know we can build a more sophisticated mobile experience and an app and all these things. I mean, the sky is kind of the limit, but it's just always been about prioritizing what's most important for the community, scaling with the growth of the community, and just focusing on what makes it the smoothest experience for everyone. So
here's a question. And this is a pretty tough one, so I hope you guys are ready for this. Where did the name Puka Trade come from?
Softball stuff.
Well, as you know, the Puka is a mythical creature from Irish folklore. And it's kind of like a whimsical horse goblin that's mischievous yet revered.
Yeah, you ever seen the Cemetery Pooka, that card from Lola?
I have seen that card. That's the only time I'd ever heard
of it.
That's
what he looks like.
Yeah, it is. It is. But that's not our namesake. Our namesake is one of the three other Pookas, which is, of course, Pooka's Mischief.
Right.
And this is the blue enchantment that says, basically, at the beginning of your upkeep, trade a card with somebody.
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah. You ever seen that weird little antelope dude smoking on? I think that
that's the Pooka,
right? The Pooka has been this. You know, he's a real character, of course, in folklore. And I don't know if you did this movie, Harvey, Jimmy Stewart, right? It was a 6-foot-tall invisible rabbit that only he could see. It's an old movie, but you know, sort of seminal. I don't know. That was a Pooka. I mean, it is a real. It is a sort of notion that of course wizards poached from folklore, but. Yeah, we like the idea of the exchange, and we've talked about just this notion of Pooka as a kind of exchange, as a kind of currency, as shorthand for trustworthy magical trade, and we think that the Pooka is a good idea to sort of put forward around that. Yeah, we're happy with the name.
We love the Pooka.
Yeah,
it's good. Right. It's good.
So don't worry. The we've got Twitter submitted questions coming up. So that's what you got to be ready for.
All right, let's do it. Bring it, internet.
Okay, first one from Mike Linneman. When will artist proofs be added to the site?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Man.
Oh, our boy, Mike Linneman. We love that
guy.
Yeah, Mike's awesome.
Yeah, he pretty much is. He's been a Pooka Trader for a long time, so big shout out to him.
Yeah. I mean, same time we get test print cards, we'll do that at the same push.
right.
Yeah.
Let's hit the next one here.
We can get all that in there.
All right, we're gonna rapid fire these. How about this? Next one, Brian Dale. What is the ratio of purchased Pooka points versus earned points in an average week?
Mm. Oh, geez. You know, without crunching some data, that would be hard to say. But what I will tell you is that the vast majority of Pooka points that have been printed and put into the system have been done so. Have entered the economy via the initial sign-up bonus.
Right.
Like basically, as you know, every time someone signs up, if they, start using the site and accomplish a couple different things, we credit them with 700 points or $7 worth of magic cards that they can spend on cards in their want list. So the vast majority of points that have entered the economy have gone in that way.
Have come from that, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, point purchasing represents, certainly a stream of incoming points, but it also relatively few people use it. I mean, compared to the total number of users on the site, I mean, the vast majority of people are coming in and sending out a couple of Shocklands and a Force of Will, and then and they're in business. I mean, there is no need to buy Pooka points; you're just trading with the cards you already own.
Right. Yeah. I mean, kind of along the same lines, we have one from @DatHipsterGamer. Sure. How do you intend to deal with the inflation of points because of the purchases and, you know, because of bonus points and stuff like that? He asks, well, point values fluctuate as people buy more. So I guess, you know, as more points are entered into the system.
Right. Definitely. I definitely understand the question. The answer to that is that right now we're in a state where many more people are signing up for the site every day and every month. And right now, the production of Pooka points has to occur proportionally to the people who are coming on the site. So we actually need to print points right now to combat deflation.
Right.
Eventually that growth will end. Eventually we'll get to a point where the total number of magic players who are interested in trading online on Pooka Trade stabilizes and it'll peak out. And at that time, we will stabilize the production of points as well. And that might look like, ending membership bonuses or potentially even extracting points. We have a couple knobs we can turn to do that as well. There's actually, a lot of different digital objects that we want to offer, for sale on the site as well. Like, badges. And of course, like the stuff we have right now is memberships at the uncommon and rare level. And there's no reason that we can't offer those things for Pooka points as well. Some people say, like right now, like, hey, how come I can't buy my uncommon or rare membership with my Pooka points? And the answer is that, well, we're not in a situation where we need to be taking Pooka points out right now. We need to be putting them in.
Right.
But eventually, once we get to that point, we can absolutely do that.
Yeah. I mean, we think about inflation. Again, it's one of these metrics that we look at when we stare at the economy. And I mean, I remember growing up thinking my first exposure to the idea of inflation was this notion like, okay, all the dollars out there are backed by gold. So says somebody, some adult. And if you print too many dollars, it starts to inflate because there's not enough gold to back it. Right. And then at some point, very quietly, we stopped using gold in the United States of America. We stopped basing the dollar on gold. And what we haven't seen is a significant amount of inflation. Or if we have, it's been very temporal. You know, we've seen this. We've seen it change. But what we haven't seen, what we recognize is that inflation is sort of a symptom and like a single marker in an economy. And that to some extent, you want a bit of inflation because actually a bit of deflation is bad for your economy. A bit of deflation puts you on this other path. And so, of course, we're looking at this. But the truth is that we haven't seen the kinds of inflation that I think people are perhaps concerned about, right? We haven't seen this idea that like the Puka point is losing value in any way.
We've exclusively seen the opposite, actually, right, as new people join.
Right. So I think it's all about that, the sort of stability of the point as a transactional unit and really as something that people can transmute into other things. But we've seen people sell Puka points. We've seen people trade Puka points for magic tickets. We've seen people exchange this currency for other fiat currencies in the world. And we've seen this be a successful exchange.
Okay, absolutely. Well, that I think takes care of a lot of, you know, kind of the takes care of the user submitted questions, I think, that are worth asking at least. Cool. So, I mean, let's, Marcel, what do you want to add?
What questions were not worth asking?
Okay. Well, if we want to, somebody asked that if you guys could code magic online.
Great question.
Sure. Yeah. We'll do it. Take that over.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it.
Okay. If we, Mike Lindeman, I don't want to leave it. He did ask another one. Okay. He said, does chicken wing sauce on the back make it moderately played or slightly played? I don't want to leave out his questions, so I guess there you go.
Yeah, well, yeah. How do you go deeper than mint? True mint. Pure mint. Don't you guys, mint. You guys,
yeah, it's like turning it to gold. The card is like had the Midas touch on it.
Right. Oh, man. Mike doesn't know this yet, but he's got some card soaked in barbecue sauce coming in the mail to him.
Oh, no. Don't let Corbin fool you. I imagine he made up that question. It's just
I did not.
Mind. I saw it on Twitter. It actually came from him.
That sounds like a Corbin question.
What are you talking about? Mike loves B-dubs with me. It's awesome.
He did actively campaign to get B-dubs.
Oh, you're missing out.
I know. Maybe is there one in like Goleta or like somewhere in Southern California? We could go. Marcel, do you know where the local B-dubs is?
There was one in Daly City. I remember looking at it and I was like, I told my lady, we just got to go there. Sure. Just to experience how bad it is. So I could hear her talk about it. But you know, there's a line and I was like, there's no way in hell I'm going to spend 15 minutes waiting for some.
You know what you should do, dude? You should come out to the Japanese fried chicken pop-up shop in downtown Oakland that's open for like 1 hour a night Fridays, and they serve that. They got 30 kinds of hot sauce, and they take over this little spot. It's really good.
Oh, I'm in.
Friday. I'm in for that, too.
They got the tingle pepper, you know that stuff? It's like
sure.
It just makes your mouth numb.
Whoa,
it's like salt and pepper and something else. Huh. And you eat this like fried chicken and then your mouth's all numb for a while.
Shit. Then you can eat whatever hot shit you want and it's not gonna bother you whatsoever. Basically.
Right. Yeah, you can go deeper. You can have hotter food.
You can go deeper.
You can have hotter sauce now.
I love eating things that make me not taste things.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about those super berries? I got some of those from my Cards Against Humanity that I haven't used yet.
I've tried those. They're crazy. They actually work. That shit's real.
These are the sour sweet flippers.
They make everything sweet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Those are good. Miracle fruit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I used to run
a food blog, we should eat those before going into the tongue numbing one.
We should. It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love that stuff. I used to, I don't know. There's a lot of good opportunities for that kind of food in Oakland. I mean, Oakland's crazy about wild eateries, good beer spots.
Just not wild wings, I guess.
Yeah, not as many wild wings, unfortunately.
We got to keep it classy here.
We got Wingstop.
They have real food out there.
We got Wingstop. Weird.
Wingstop has good wings. Well, they did. They kind of went down a little bit, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. So guys, tell us about this. You guys got a Kickstarter.
Indiegogo. It's an Indiegogo project. We're super hyped about it. It's super exciting for us, and it represents a real step forward that we're frankly just juiced about. We're trying to finance five big features that we alluded to before. The biggest of them by far is support for Magic Online cards on Puka Trade. We think that's super groundbreaking, and it'll have a huge impact on the world of Magic. You know, right now it's sort of insane that you have two segments of Magic player. You got your digital player and you got your paper player, and it's pretty rare that they overlap. Like a lot of times people are kind of siloed off in their own different segments. So yeah, we want to combine that together. You know, we want to create a world where you can exchange your digital cards for paper cards and vice versa.
Right. Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to make that really fluid and to improve the Magic Online trading experience beyond what we've seen. I mean, we play a bit of Magic Online, and certainly we have some close contacts. We're real deep in it, and we've heard the pain points. We've seen the experience. We've bought polluted deltas from bots and just sort of felt it. You know, we've been in there, and I've really recognized that we can do better, and that Puka Trade is a great place to sort of start those trades, to find people who want cards and to fulfill those wants,
yeah,
and have a fair price associated with it.
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure we don't have to tell your listeners that the only way to peer-to-peer trade on Magic Online right now is basically to hop into a giant chat room or IRC channel and start hollering and hoping someone hears you, you know? And, yeah. Yeah, like Mitch said, we can do better and we plan to, and that's the goal here.
So how will it work? Tell us, will somebody really be able to take their paper cards and turn them into a collection on Modo or vice versa?
Yeah, absolutely. From a technical standpoint, the way we want it to work, let's approach it from a user standpoint, actually. We basically want it to work just like any other trade on Puka Trade, in that, through our web portal, you can find trades on the Send a Card page. When someone wants something, you could just initiate a trade. The difference is, instead of mailing the card, you hop on Magic Online. And eventually we want to get to the point where all of this exchange is facilitated by a bot. So think about the bot as essentially like a smart storage locker, right? It's kind of there on Magic Online. It's always kind of, it knows what's up. It knows what's happening at Puka Trade. And when you log on to Magic Online after initiating a trade, it sees you. And it initiates a trade with you and says, oh, hey, you got that polluted delta you're sending to this other guy? And you're like, yep, here you go. And you just pass it off, and then you're done. The beauty of it at that point for the sender is that they have fulfilled their side of the responsibility. So those points, those Puka points that had gone from the recipient's account to escrow can then be delivered to the sender. So they're done. They're done. They're out of the picture, right. And they're credited the for the trade.
Transaction.
Yeah. And now the bot's got the polluted delta, and it's like, oh, hey, other guy, we got your card. He dropped it off. Come get it whenever you want. And then that person logs into Modo. The bot delivers the card, and then the transaction's complete. It's kind of ridiculously painless,
yeah.
So, which is how we like it.
So what's stopping someone from hating on Puka Trade and hanging up, say, the one bot constantly trying to trade it so that no one else can trade with that bot?
Oh, well, there's going to be multiple bots.
We've been investigating the sort of way that bot arrays can be built and managed, and we really feel like bots can be scaled horizontally. Availability is not really the bottleneck here. It's actually more about kind of inventory management and moving cards around on the back end, right? Because, of course, each bot represents a single sort of logged in Magic Online client. So much of the complexity in running a bot is in moving things around behind the scenes so that you can actually deliver the card object to the person who logs in with the trade ID and the password. So we really feel like having a number of bots available to deal with these trades is not going to be issue.
And it'll certainly be critical. I mean, now that we have 50,000 people trading on the site, we certainly couldn't serve them all with one single bot.
Right.
But I mean, can someone if they want to get this one specific card, so that means they got to log on to that one specific bot. And if someone was, say, spamming that one bot and hanging up that bot, would they not get access to the card?
Oh, well, from a delivery standpoint, any of the bots can really deliver the card. So, basically once you're the recipient of a card and it's ready for you, you just log on, and then nobody can like take over a bot or stop it from
initiating the trade. But the bot has to have it in its collection to facilitate the trade. So you need to have it. So if you're a bot and, I guess if somebody tried to activate a trade with you.
Yeah. Right. So, okay, just to take it a little deeper in the technical standpoint, the bots will think of the bots as actual delivery bots. There's going to be two different classifications of bot. You have your storage bot, which is, managing a collection and passing cards back and forth amongst themselves. And then the delivery bot. This is the class of bot that's actually delivering the cards to the people. So if one delivery bot is hung up in a trade with somebody else, whether or not that person's actively trying to spam the bot or whatever, the other delivery bots will be able to, you know, grab the card and deliver it accordingly.
Right. And I mean, we can certainly come up with ways to sort of rate limit and prevent these kinds of hangups and abuses that we're going to see. I mean, of course, we've had to come up with a ton of different ways to prevent the sort of abuse that you're talking about, people just trying to hate. And we're certainly up for that challenge, and we think it's achievable. So we think there's technical ways around this, and it's really just a matter of getting cards to people as quickly as possible. I mean, we've seen some of the most some elegant sort of delivery paths on Magic Online, where a bot can chat you up and can pass you the card almost before you having to do anything to it. So we know that the technology is out there. It's just a matter of building the right experience for the users.
Really, yeah. And the short of it is that this whole system works because of the strength of our trading system, right? It works because there's high demand for Puka points. People want them. They trust them. And I don't think anyone could just create that overnight.
No. I mean, and this certainly speaks to the complexity of this problem. I mean, we're launching this big campaign where we got big, ambitious goals here. And Magic Online trading is in many ways a new idea in the world. This is not something that exists, paper to digital, digital to paper. We're trying to break new ground here. And we recognize that there's going to be these roadblocks and these challenges along the way, which is part of the reason why there's such complexity in this thing, why it's going to take so much time to build this thing. I mean, Magic Online, the client will change its trade configuration overnight. I mean, they'll release a weird beta, theta version that just like breaks everybody's bot experience, you know, and that's the kind of thing that we're diving into on the Magic Online world. We're recognizing that. We have to try to make the experience as good as we can, even on the shifting landscape that's there. So certainly it's part of the complexity dealing with these haters, but we recognize that we can deal with it.
Yeah, it's definitely a colossal undertaking. You know, it's not some small thing that's, you know, going to cost a couple $1,000. Like, this is big. Like, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it right. And it matters to us that we write real, secure, reliable code in the best possible way to deliver the best user experience for the people on PukaTrade. That's always how we've approached our technology, and that's why we have such a huge following. So that's exactly what we're aiming to accomplish again.
Yeah, I really think this is going to be a game changer just for Magic Finance in general. I've been waiting for something like this forever, and I've been trying to pitch this to you guys a little bit. You guys are like, hey, just wait a little bit. It'll be there eventually. And right. Now that it's here, like, I'm doing backflips, so I'm really excited about that.
Nice. Well, that's so awesome. It feels super cool to hear you say that. And we're super excited as well. We also have a gift for you and for all of your listeners on Brainstorm Brewery that we're excited to announce right now. So we want to offer everyone who goes to our Indiegogo project from Brainstorm Brewery right now and makes a donation, 10% refund in the form of Puka points. And for anyone who's on PukaTrade in your audience right now, you know, I'm sure they'll love to get a little Puka point bonus. To anyone who hasn't created an account yet, it'll be an opportunity for you to check out the site and see how it all works.
Right.
So that's just a gift that you know, Mitch and I and everyone at the PukaTrade team wants to extend to your audience as a thank you for contributing to this ambitious project.
Well, thank you. And I do want to mention that it may seem like an expensive perk. They got a $250 perk for a lifetime membership to a silver level. And it may seem like a lot of money, but, you know, there's finance people out there that do a lot of trade, or if you really want to get your collection going, I think that's a great value for people that have a long-term aspect in trading Magic Finance. So, you know, I do definitely recommend people that they got that extra funds around, go for that option.
Yeah, man, it's never going to be cheaper than it is today. I mean, certainly the lifetime, I mean, it's only going to get better, right? You got to recognize that.
We're just going to keep adding features.
Yeah, exactly. In a couple of years, that thing is going to be crazy. And who knows? I mean, I think getting it, we actually certainly had a ton of people who got in on the last campaign, and they are still the sort of grandfathers and mothers who are stoked. Oh,
they're
stoked. They're on lifetime mode, and they just sort of get to benefit from now on. And you know, we got plans for the mythic rare tier. We got plans for these kinds of features that are going to make these higher order tiers really, really something and really specialized towards different groups of users. I mean, whether it's store owners who are trying to manage inventories more efficiently, people trying to get more trades running over the wire. So certainly it's a great opportunity to get in at that level.
Yeah. yeah, if anyone if anyone supports this idea of digital to paper and vice versa, thanks in advance for checking out the project. It's super near and dear to our hearts, and we have high hopes and expectations for what we can accomplish with it.
Yeah. What if we run through the other four things we're trying to do just real quickly, and then you guys tell us what sort of jumps out at you as something that's real relevant to your interests here, right? So number one, we got the second biggest bucket is the mobile version. We got to do better on just a mobile responsive version. It's going to work on your phone. It's not an app. It's just something that works in your mobile Safari or your mobile Chrome, and it feels good and it feels snappy. And we made good progress on this now, but it's coming soon. So that's one thing.
Yeah, we really like the idea of design. Having our mobile design be designed responsively, instead of actually creating an Android app or an iPhone app or both. We just want to create a world where you log on to PookaTrade, you in Safari or Chrome, and it's like a beautiful, elegant experience for you. So that's our goal for that.
I will say that our generation, we're a mouse and keyboard generation. And the future, I just had to show the Adobe had this show I was working on, and it kind of blew my mind. Like, we're going to be the only generation that really communicates with the computer through a mouse and keyboard. Older people, they like touch screens because it's easier for them. Younger people, all they know is touch screens. So the touch and responsive design is the future that you're supposed to be building towards. And by not embracing that you're actually just falling behind. And that's just a matter of time.
It's so true. And, when we look at the analytics behind our site, we can see that one in every four people who comes to PookaTrade is doing so through a mobile device. And, I got to wonder, like, if that was an incredible experience, would that be 2 in 4, 3 in 4?
For sure.
Yeah,
we got to do better. I mean, and certainly we recognize that around the world, people are using mobile devices much more predominantly than desktop machines. I mean, I think the people who are having some of the most success are the ones running the Chrome auto refreshers, and they're running it on their desktops during the day. And the truth is that the website needs to be functional and fun for everybody, whether they're hitting it on an old flip phone or on a on a new laptop. So we certainly have big goals around getting the site responsive. Maybe eventually going, in the future, we talk 2016 and beyond, going towards the native mobile app experience. But we think we got to nail responsive first. Mobile's a huge part of it. What else are we looking at? We're looking at
condition.
Everybody wants condition.
Absolutely. Yeah. So right now, I don't know if everyone knows, but right now only near mint or mint cards may be traded on PookaTrade. There's a lot of cards out there that don't necessarily fit that bill. We've got some awesome ideas as to how to implement this, but that's one of the big goals of our project as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys. You guys are real condition. You guys know this stuff. What is an LP card worth related to a near mint? What is the percentage difference, if you had to say? Is there like a range, or is it?
Are we talking standard cards? Because like there's a huge difference comparatively to old stuff.
Is it really different?
Oh, it's definitely different. Because like if you're talking like Alpha Power or something like that, like the percentage from near mint to SP can be 50%.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you're talking standard cards, you're talking like 15%.
Sure.
Right, because you think about it, you hit the collector's market with that older stuff. And if you're a legacy player and you plan on playing these cards forever, you may care about the condition. And obviously, if you collect something like Power, literally a collector, you care about it a lot. But if you're a standard player and you're going to use these cards for 12 months and then they're going to go in your binder, you're going to sell them, you'll be done with them, you just want to keep playing standard, really doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, well, another major part of it is like some of those cards can never be reprinted, right? So,
well, right,
it's not like it's not like you're getting any more near mint copies.
Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah,
it'd be great for to have that on the website because like we just said, some people want that near mint stuff, some people want that lightly played stuff, and that will really, some people want to play Legacy for the cheapest amount possible. And they don't care if their dual lands are basically ripped in half so long as they can put the two halves together into a sleeve and play. So those people can actually get quite a bit of value out of building cheap decks with beat up cards, but get the cards that they need.
Oh, yeah, right? Definitely. Yeah, I'm pretty excited to support this. I mean, one of the things is that you know, one of the pain points to Puka Trade that people sometimes stumble on is kind of like the level of disagreement that can come into play in a transaction with a non-near mint card. You know, one person's SP is not necessarily like another person's. And, you know, we really want to make that that dispute process, when it does come up, as simple, as painless as possible. And so, you know, that involves just like better communication tools, like attachments where people can put images in and say, look, this is what I got. And like, this is why I don't think it's this. And then like making it really easy right. for people to transfer points between each other fluidly without the assistance of an admin is exactly the direction that yeah. we want to go.
Case resolution handshakes, the ability to complete trades that you want to complete. You know, you don't want to you don't want to delay. You don't want to bring an admin into, you just want to get it done and move on. And I think that means simple percentage points to say, okay, this is a 40% discount because the thing's beat up, or this is a 10% because it's a little off near mint. And we think, I mean, of course, that's the reason we have near mint only today, is so that we can stabilize the Puka price, right? So that we can have right. a single sort of fair trade value. Mm-hmm. And we just need to come up with that fair trade percentage or that fair trade offset.
Yeah, super achievable.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, next on the list is non-English cards. We're super excited to get deep into this. Right now, also, you can only trade English cards on the site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially as you know, we become more international and we want to take you know, larger steps into the global community. We want to be able to trade cards of multiple languages as well. Like, there's no reason that we should only support English. We're super excited to dip into this.
Right. Yeah. Big question is pricing. We spoke about this a bit before. Just What's the difference between an Italian and an English mandarin? You know, when I look on eBay, it's actually not a huge spread. But when I talk to folks in Britain or in Europe, in their minds, the Italian mandarins were just incredibly prevalent. Like, everybody had them. And the English mandarins were super rare. You know, so in that market, it's worth such a different amount, or the perceptual, the price memory is so different. And so we really wonder about that. And we wonder how we can stabilize that and kind of give people, again, this fair price for their mandarin, whether it's Italian, whether it's English. You know, what's your guys' take on that? I mean, you guys, of course, move a lot of these cards at different rarities, different languages.
Oh, Italian legends.
Beautiful. What a
a lot of times with, in my experience at least, in dealing with, you know, when we're not talking the high-end old stuff where those foreign languages can be desirable, a lot of times people want the cheapest version. If you're just talking everyday cards and everyday FNM players, they want the Return to Ravnica Shockland, not the you know, Dissension Shockland or whatever. And it's kind of the same thing. A lot of people don't have interest in foreign cards. The foreign cards that, you know, as long as they're not foil and you know, pimp, something like that. But just say you have a Japanese copy of a card, a lot of people don't want it, because they don't want to pay the associated whatever percent premium that, you know, most people believe goes with it. So it's kind of a matter of finding that guy, because the person who does want it is happy to pay that premium and, you know, understands what it takes to get it. But the problem is finding those people is so difficult. So having support for that on Puka Trade is actually really helpful when you do have something a little more niche like that, so that people can actually you can get into the hands of people who want it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. Cool. You know, and along with all these things, you know, cards of multiple condition, non-English cards, and you know, things of that nature, comes the versions I'll accept feature, right? Like, you know, when you want a card, it's not necessarily like you'll accept any version of it, right? Like, right. You know, we all have our preferences. Like, I like black bordered Korean versions, or, you know, I like, you know, I'm down with this edition from this card from beta and alpha, but I don't want it from unlimited and revised. Got to stay black border, yeah, right? And so people have those preferences, and we want to give them the tools to select them with granularity. And so, yeah, we're calling that the quantity feature, where you can say, like, look, I want four birds of paradise, but I'll accept them in this, this, and this condition.
Right. And someone else can come along and say, okay, I got you on four birds of paradise. I don't need to commit to these four separate trades with this one person. I can actually add these cards to my basket. I mean, add them to a cart. I mean, treat a trade
like a package.
Right. With an individual, rather than as these individual kind of card, you know, these card objects that we do on Puka Trade today, where it's one trade ID per card. So, add and remove cards from a package with someone and maximize your postage and maximize the sort of trade opportunity.
Yeah. The quantity feature is really interesting. It's one of the most complicated and hard to explain and kind of deep and far reaching feature, you know, in this batch of five, but it's also one with like a huge amount of upside, and a lot of it gets really technical. And I think you kind of have to be a user on the site to really understand necessarily what the quantity feature is going to deliver. But it's super exciting, and it's something we really think will change the site.
Imagine having a package of 5 cards going to someone across the world, and you have to cancel one of the cards, and one of the cards was actually not near mint, and one of the cards you need to change the language at the last minute because you traded the other one away, and you've got all these kind of granular controls, and your trading partner is sort of handshaking along the way. You're making these decisions together. They're accepting the changes to the terms of the trade. I mean, at every point, we're just trying to keep everybody
informed and aware and in the loop and, an active participant of it. And, that might make it sound like more complicated, and to some extent it is, but we're gonna keep it elegant. We're gonna keep the experience painless.
People want more control, so we got to do it.
All right.
But I mean, beyond all this stuff, I mean, of course, we talk about these 5 big features, but we just have this incredible list of stuff to build. I mean, we talk about bounties. I wanna pay more for a card, or these big ideas for ways to sort of ease trade, or I want to manage my inbox a little bit more efficiently. I want to have collector's editions, right? We want to have every Magic card possible tradable on the site, or
visibility on other people's trade binders, so I can see their have list and create these pull trades.
Yeah, enhanced filtration on the send a card page, so you just find the people you can actually deal with.
Yeah, I mean, the list of features that we want to build is crazy long. Like, it's all digital, but if you put it onto a scroll, it would go a few stories.
Yeah, but all this stuff gets mixed into the big project, right? I mean, the goal is to hit this next threshold and to burn on it, to open the lane, right? To be able to work on these things in a full-time way, which frankly we're not able to do now. You know, not everybody is able to sort of focus in this way, and so. A big part of our goal is to be able to nail these features in the near term.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, they're huge goals, but, I think, our development team is incredibly competent. We've done a crowdfunding campaign before, I guess it was 2014, 2013. And, I think we have this incredible track record from the resources we got from that. Like, we blew it out of the park for everybody then, and we're super excited to do it again.
Yeah, we can do it again.
So where can people reach you at if they wanted to find you out there on the internet?
Hit us up at Twitter. Twitter's great. Like, it's an awesome way to just ask a question. It's, short and sweet, and we can get back to you right there. My Twitter handle is at PookaTrade.
Yeah, and I'm JohanMagnus94 on Twitter, which is a wild guy. But he posts some cool stuff. That guy, whoever that guy is on Twitter, follows some strange accounts, and you're going to get an eyeful. And actually, I'm working on all these crazy Magic side projects, just sort of midnight hours, and just be on the lookout for some big things coming out of that Twitter account, JohanMagnus94. Yeah.
Like corncob playmats.
Corncob playmats. We got a playmat label. It's like a t-shirt label, limited edition. Playmats coming out soon, 2015, spring.
It's not
spring
affiliated quarter. With Puka Trade.
No, but this is just exciting. I'm building a Twitter bot, a magical Twitter bot. I mean, there's just a lot of possibilities out there. So
Big things are happening.
Big things.
Yeah. This is what we do instead of watching TV, by the way.
Yeah.
like corncob playmats.
Yeah, although I do watch a fair bit of Broad City. There's a lot of good TV out there.
So one last question before you guys go. Where do you see Puka Trade at 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What's your long-term goals with the site?
Did you know that there are 25 million Magic players in the world?
I do now.
Yeah, and I gotta believe that.
Where did that number come from? Out of curiosity,
Wizards of the Coast, actually. Yeah, and they published this years ago, so by now it's probably even more.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, it's significantly more.
Right, that's what I was trying to figure out. If we had an updated, an updated number.
Yeah, we got to. Yeah,
that's the sort of thing that they're fairly tight-lipped about. Doesn't come out very often.
That's true.
It's the thing. It's a guesswork for them too, because you got to think about it.
Right.
Like, they extrapolate it from the registered DCI numbers, but like nobody actually knows how many people play in their basement.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's true.
All right. But anyways, go on. Go. If you continue your answer.
I mean, the way I see it is like, even if there's even if 2 million out of those 25 million players are interested in trading on Puka Trade, like that is we have a tremendous amount of way to go. Like, we got a long way to go to get. to get the site to the point where, you know, our growth has stabilized and we have peaked out and we are serving everyone who plays Magic who wants to be exchanging on the site. And so that's our path forward over the next, you know, X years. Like, yeah. We got to get to the point where it's an incredible resource for everyone who wants to trade. And that's all we're focused on, you know. We don't want to go to other games or start facilitating other projects. We're here for the Magic community. And, you know, we're gonna make the site as good as we can for everyone.
Right. 5 years, we're still here. I mean, we've looked at the arc of so many companies in the Bay Area. I mean, there's this sort of live fast, die young, get money, burn out. And that's not the path we're on here. You know, we're looking at, what does it mean to be a local game store that's responsible for people having a good time and enjoying community and connecting with each other? And we feel like in many ways Puka Trade does that. It allows people to exchange this stuff, and we recognize the value there. We want to fulfill that. So, you know, we plan to just be here. We want it to be a sort of thriving self-sustainable business in the coming years here, and we're willing to bootstrap and put it together in the meantime. And so we're there. So we really believe in the idea. And certainly in the community and what we can do here.
If we're wrapping things up here, we just want to take a second to say thank you so much for having us on the show. It's been a ton of fun. Yeah, we love what you guys do. Love Bay Area Magic. And yeah, it's been a blast. We really appreciate the invite.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you again for coming on, guys.
Thank you.
Indeed. This is going to be a great episode. And I'm sure people could tune back to this in the future if they want to know what's up with Puka Trade.
That's right. I'll come back. It's like that record where we like scroll all the history on this. This is going to be good. This is one of the ages.
Shit, it's going on the internet. It's like the Library of Alexandria.
They never forget.
Exactly.
Can't burn that down.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Thanks again, guys.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.